Hello, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced by WFHB and Indiana University's Asian Culture Center. We ask critical questions about identity, culture, community, and shared assumptions. We air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30 in the evening. My name is Kulsum Tapal. Today, I will be talking with Sari Lee and Professor Shruti Rana to discuss the current political and social environment for AAPI individuals. To start, thank you so much for joining us. And if you don't mind, just introducing yourselves to our audience. Maybe Sari can start and then Shruti.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Sari Lee. I am the National Organizing Manager at NAPAW. I have been working at NAPAW for the past 2 or 3 years, first as a Chicago organizer, then as a National Field Engagement Organizer, and now as National Organizing Manager. So yeah, really excited to be here today.
Hi, my name is Shruti Rana. I'm the co-chair of the Indiana chapter of the National Asian Pacific Women's Forum. I'm also a lawyer and a professor at IU, where I focus on international law and human rights. And I've been involved in a lot of advocacy around gender issues, human rights issues, and civil rights efforts throughout my career. And I'm also excited to be here, and thank you for inviting me here.
So I'm so excited to talk to both of you. You both bring such diverse experiences to this issue. And today, as we talk about, you know, what the political and social environment looks like for AAPI individuals, I think it's really important to start kind of from the current situation, which is we just had an election. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of what did efforts gearing up to this recent election look like for NAPAW and the broader AAPI community?
Yeah, so I can start off talking about our work nationally. So NAPAW has been doing electoral organizing for, I think, like the past 2 or 3 years now. And even before that, we did some electoral work as well. But really, in the past 2 or 3 years, we've really invested in doing deep canvassing in language in some of our chapters. And so up until 2020, we invested mostly in our Georgia and Chicago chapters due to run GOTV campaigns. But then I think what was different in 2020 is that we decided to expand that work in some of our chapters without locally based or full-time organizers on the ground. So that includes our Indiana chapter, that also includes our Arizona chapter and our newly formed Florida chapter as well. Again, kind of like what we focus on is deep canvassing. So not just like calling folks like once or twice and having conversations just about voting, but really like going deep into the issues that impact our communities and issues that they care about, and then really try to build a relationship from there. I think something else that makes our work stand apart from other organizations, even AAPI organizations, is how many languages we do that deep canvassing work in. So in Chicago, we did deep canvassing in 15 languages. We also did deep canvassing in 15 languages in our Georgia chapter as well. And I know that Shruti can talk a little bit about kind of like what that looked like in Indiana, where we also did a little bit of canvassing, phone banking, text banking in language as well. So I'm going to pass it off to her to talk about it.
Great, thank you. So working with NAPAW, we did a lot of this deep canvassing in Indiana. We spent most of the summer and fall doing Get Out the Vote efforts. And we did 16 weeks of phone banking, where we mobilized over 120 volunteers and made thousands of calls. And what we thought was really significant about this effort was not only was it deep canvassing, really trying to find out what issues mattered to AAPI women in Indiana, we also believe it was the first systematic outreach to AAPI women in Indiana. They had not been specifically targeted or reached out to by both political parties, and there had been limited grassroots efforts to reach this group of women before. So that was something really exciting that we felt really gave us a lot of momentum when we were doing these Get Out the Vote efforts, that we knew we were among the first, that we were getting information and making contacts and relationships that were new and just really exciting. We also got some great press on the work that we were doing. We were featured in an Indiana publication. We were featured in a TV video, as well as some local language press, specifically Chinese language press. And as Sari mentioned, we did the outreach in a number of different languages. So in addition to English, we had Mandarin, Punjabi, Nepali, Korean, Filipino, a bunch of different languages. So that was a really great part of it as well, that we could really make these deep connections. And we were able to help quite a few people with the mechanics of voting, getting registered, casting their mail-in ballot, and casting their in-person ballots as well. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, and if I could add one more thing, just in terms of the numbers, I think originally, like, our Indiana chapter made a 200 goal, just like getting 200 folks to commit to vote. They completely blew that goal out of the water. They ended up getting, I think, more than 400 people. And what's really amazing about it is not just like the number of people who committed to vote, but really the number of people who said that they were interested in actually getting involved. That's like the part that's really important. There were, I think, like 47 folks who said that they wanted to get involved and who we are still in like relationship with. And I think that just attests to the fact that when we do electoral work, we don't just do it during like that really high tension, like GOTV season that only lasts for like a couple months during the year, like every other year. But really we do organizing year round, and we understand that all like the electoral work we do is important, makes an impact, but we also know that that can build onto something more, that we can continue to build relationships and not just mobilize folks, but organize them, like really invest in them, invest in those relationships, invest in like bringing into those folks into the chapter to work on local issues, not just when it comes to GOTV.
Yeah. And just to add to that a little bit, not only were many of the people we reached out to telling us that this was the first time anyone had reached out to them to canvas and find out what issues were important to them, as well as give them voting information, but a lot of our volunteers, they told us that this was the first time they had been involved in either phone banking or get out the vote efforts. And as I said, we had over 120 volunteers, and that just pays forward, right? All of these volunteers now have experience in getting out the vote and canvassing, and are just much more likely to engage in this type of advocacy and community work in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's super impactful for how our activism in our community looks like in the future, and what basically in amplifying our voices and making sure that we're heard. Kind of going off of that point that organizing is not just a few months every other year sort of issue, it's a everyday sort of thing. What does political and advocacy, what does that environment look like now transitioning from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, specifically for our community?
Yeah, so I think 2016, like that year was in particular kind of like a reckoning for a lot of AAPI folks. Something that I hear a lot whenever I do one-on-ones with folks like all across the country, not just like in Indiana, but like all across the country, is that they tell me that they mentioned that 2016 was kind of the year that they really got politicized. And I think that speaks to a lot. I think the fact that the Trump administration was something that was really deeply polarizing to folks, I think that says a lot. But I think moving into like a Biden administration, an administration that is slightly more friendly to some of our issues, where we can really like push for like progressive issues and moving those forward, I would say that in a lot of ways, it is the same, but of course, it's also different. I think in the way that it is like the same, like with any administration, it's really important that at like NOPOF, as a 501c3 organization, as a nonpartisan organization, we know that at our core, it's really important that we focus on issues that impact our communities. And so, for example, I'm thinking about the recent immigration bill that the Biden administration introduced. I think on a lot of fronts, it was great. It definitely reversed some of the impact that the Trump administration had like really done a lot of the harm. At the same time, like for example, that bill did not include anything talking about healthcare access for immigrants. And that is like an issue that NOPOF really, really cares about at its core. That is also one of our signature national campaigns. And so we understand that like, yes, it's a friendlier administration, but that doesn't mean that the organizing we do stops, and that like we actually need to do much, much more, particularly because some folks might feel like since we have a new administration, a friendlier administration, that means that everything that we want will get done. And that is not necessarily the case. But I think that's like kind of like where we're coming from at NOPOF on a national level.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, I think this is a tremendous moment of hope and opportunity for change, but there's so much work to be done. And I think that's even more the case in Indiana, where in addition to addressing The impacts of a lot of the really negative things that happened over the last couple of years. We're also in the process of building up infrastructure and coalitions and things like that. And I think a lot of the past 4 years was spent in defensive mode. And now it's an opportunity to move to be proactive. But again, that takes tremendous amount of work. But also there's so much damage that's been done that needs to be repaired. And I think it's quite positive, for example, that there is less overt hostility coming out of our national leadership towards AAPI communities as well as immigrants. But there's just this centuries-long legacy of stereotyping, stigmatizing, and, you know, blaming AAPI communities for various things that we really need to structurally address in a much more comprehensive way. So I think now is actually when the hardest work starts and we have the most potential. But again, we have to both undo, you know, sort of the damage of the last few years while also strategizing and having the vision to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that perfectly transitions into my next point of what are those efforts? What are those specific policies and ideas that you both are seeing being pushed in your communities to bring in the AAPI community to be more civically engaged, to be more active, but then to also introduce our allies to our voices if they haven't heard them before, and to just say like, hey, we're here and our voices matter and our issues matter. So what are those policies and efforts look like?
Yeah, so I can start by actually talking about more about like what NOPOF is, and that will actually, I think, help kind of inform like the policies and like efforts that we're working on. So NOPOF is a national organization composed of 14 chapters across the country, Indiana being one of them. I think in the past, we were very much known for our policy and communications work, particularly in the DC area. And really in the past like 5 years, we're becoming a lot more known for our organizing work as well. And by organizing, what I mean is developing leaders and communities, investing in their leadership, centering their voices so that we can push for structural change and really transform people's lives. So the people who are leading our work are really the folks who are impacted by our issues, who may not necessarily be policy experts or legal experts. And I think that is like something that's really important to highlight. And so I think me coming from an organizing background, I can't really talk about all the policies that we're working on. But what I can say is that like when it comes to our chapters, when it comes to our organizers, some of the policies that we really like push for, one of them is the HEAL Act, which stands for the Health and Equity Under the Law, so HEAL for Immigrant Women and Families Act. And that is like that was like a piece of legislation that's been around since I think like 2015. But since 2019, NOPOF has really led the work nationally around it, not just on the policy side of things, but also really on the organizing side as well, because we understand that like in order for policy to be passed, in order for policy to actually really transform people's lives, communities have to be directly tied to that work, and that also communities on the ground have to be the one really pushing for it, because we know that that is when policy has the biggest impact. And so the HEAL Act would make healthcare accessible for everyone regardless of immigration status. So right now there's a 5-year waiting period for immigrants, including green card holders, to be able to access Medicaid, the ACA marketplace, and then also CHIP. And so basically what the HEAL Act would do is it would remove those barriers, those policy and legal barriers that prevent immigrants from accessing healthcare. And it would also open up the ACA marketplace to undocumented immigrants as well. So green card holders, DACA recipients would be able to access Medicaid without having to wait 5 years, and undocumented folks would be able to access the ACA marketplace and purchase affordable healthcare, which is really important because, you know, if we don't have access to affordable healthcare, we don't get access to preventative quality care. And yeah, that really affects people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such an important issue on a national level, I think. We often focus, what are we doing to make sure our immigration policies are inclusive? And we don't think about, okay, once everyone is here, you know, they've sought asylum and people are coming from all sorts of situations, but that's not enough. It's the next level is, you know, how can they have a good quality life? Because people don't just deserve to exist. They deserve to live well. So that's a very important policy. I'm glad that NOPOF is advocating for it. I'd love to hear kind of on a local level in Indiana, what are our policies and efforts specifically geared towards AAPI community? I'm assuming potentially that the efforts look a little differently on a local level compared to the pushes happening nationally?
Yes, that's correct. So we very much build off of what the national organization is doing, but also look very closely at the issues that are affecting us in Indiana and, you know, have been moving around and advocating around those issues as well. So we did coordinate a little bit with the national organization in promoting the HEAL Act and some of the things that Sari just described. In addition, we've been focusing actually most heavily on a lot of things that are just affecting us here in Indiana more specifically. So for example, in addition to the Get Out the Vote efforts, we did a lot of related advocacy over the past year that we plan to continue. So for example, we issued a Black Lives Matter solidarity statement last summer in the midst of protests to both raise awareness and show solidarity about some of the issues that were at stake. We also did a number of public advocacy issues. For example, there has been a spate of reproductive health bills around the country that rely on dangerous and discredited stereotypes about Asian American women. And so we advocated against those both in Indiana, but also in some other states like New York, where similar bills are being proposed. And in New York, we testified before New York state lawmakers along with the New York chapter of NAPOLF. So that was just a great example of how we're coordinating to defeat these initiatives and bills that are being passed all around the country. Even if they're being passed locally within states, they're sort of coordinated campaigns. We have also been advocating around issues that, you know, are important to our members and the AAPI women that we've talked to, but also immigration more generally. As Sari noted, here locally, there's been an issue with the sheriff's office collaborating with ICE. So we've spoken out against that. And we've been engaged in sort of lots of local coalition building and campaigns to support our communities during this pandemic, and along with the, you know, the disparate impacts of the pandemic as well.
Yeah. And actually that brings me to my next thing that I wanted to ask about is that, you know, with the pandemic, we've seen for a variety of reasons that we don't have enough time in the day to discuss that it's affecting, you know, Black and brown bodies the most. But we've also seen in conjunction with that, a rise in anti-Asian violence and racism because of stereotypes that are being perpetuated associated with the coronavirus, but also stereotypes that have long surpassed the existence of the coronavirus. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what your advice essentially is to communities that are combating this other form of pandemic, which is a racism, but also, you know, how can allies support specifically the AAPI community as we see a rise in anti-Asian violence?
So I want to start out by emphasizing that this is really an issue that is coming on the heels of other pandemic impacts. So we already know that AAPI communities around the U.S. and in Indiana as well have been disproportionately affected by the health and economic impacts of the pandemic. And for example, we were involved in some equal pay efforts in Indiana and nationally, particularly in light of the fact that Asian American women have been the hardest hit in terms of job losses and the number of women who have left the workforce, or among the hardest hit in the country. So having this sort of level of extreme violence and hate crimes on top of that is really compounding the already devastating impacts of the pandemic. So as you mentioned, we know that over the last year, there's been a very large rise in anti-Asian hate crimes and you know, other forms of aggression. And so one of the things that we have done here in Indiana is not immune from that spike. There's been a number of both well-publicized, there's been a number of well-publicized incidents in Indiana where AAPI Hoosiers were targeted and subject to, you know, things ranging from, you know, epithets hurled at them to violence, to discrimination, and turned away from various businesses. And we know that that's just the tip of the iceberg because so much of this goes unreported, right? The kind of incidents that make it into the news or the headlines, you know, are just either some of the most extreme or just somebody was able to report it. And I can just say anecdotally, I've spoken to so many people in Indiana who are experiencing these hate crimes and Various forms of aggression, but haven't reported it, right? So I think it's vastly underreported. But even with that vast underreporting, we have a huge spike around the state. And one of the things that NAPOF Indiana is doing is that we have put together a petition. This was, you know, a combined effort, but really through the work of Professors Ellen Wu and Melissa Borja. And this petition details the rise in anti-Asian violence across Indiana and calls for our state leadership to take action and to seek justice and accountability for what is happening. So we have a petition that we're asking people to sign, and we're going to be presenting to our state leadership, basically saying that Asian American Hoosiers deserve to live safely and free of fear, and we need our leaders who will ensure their safety and freedom. And so what we're asking for is for our leadership to take official action to recognize and condemn acts of racism, xenophobia, and intolerance against AAPI Hoosiers, their communities, families, faith communities, businesses, and institutions. And we urge them also to implement procedures and programs to create systematic and accessible mechanisms for reporting hate incidents and receiving concrete support. Also, very much want to show solidarity with Black Hoosiers and people of color all over Indiana. And we're not asking for more policing as solutions or escalating law enforcement, but to pursue community-based and restorative justice-based solutions. We also are urging that a statewide advisory committee on Asian American Pacific Islander affairs be established in Indiana so that it can serve as a communications pipeline and an advocacy liaison between AAPI Hoosiers and the governor's office. We have these types of commissions all over the country, and they've been proven through data and evidence to be one of the most effective ways to address and prevent hate incidents. And, you know, we're asking for various measures to change the climate of hate and fear that is ongoing right now, and urging our state leaders and officials to show leadership, right, both in terms of their actions and their words, but also what they do to protect and value and recognize the AAPI community in Indiana.
Oh, and if I can add one thing, so you can sign the petition at napawf.org, napawf.org/Indiana-anti-racism. So we'll be planning on sending and collecting signatures and sending the petition to the governor on Thursday, March 11th. Right now, we just launched the campaign yesterday. I think right now we're at over 350 signatures and still counting.
Great. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. So hopefully we can encourage everyone who's listening today to go onto this website and sign this petition. And then after even the petition is signed and sent, to continue advocating for these issues and telling everyone you know. Okay, so as we kind of wrap up here, I guess I'd like to hear just a quick piece of advice that you have to share for individuals who are hoping to get more engaged in either civic engagement, advocacy, or just learn more about what's happening in their communities.
You should join NAPOF Indiana. Yeah, I think, yeah, Shuji can talk more about this, but they meet every month on the last Sunday of the month. They're great. They talk about issues, they organize themselves, they, you know, we talk about more. They bring folks in to get more engaged with civic engagement and advocacy around issues. And so I would say join NAPOF Indiana.
I have a question on this. So who is welcome to kind of be a part of NAPOF groups? Is it open to everyone or...
That's a great question. Yes, it's open to anyone who is interested in supporting, uplifting, and amplifying the voices of AAPI women in Indiana. And, you know, we are inclusive and we really welcome, you know, people of different genders, different communities to join. And we have a pretty diverse membership. And I was just going to agree with Sari. I think that's a great way to get involved, is to join the organization. It's a great community building effort. So I feel like not only do we do this, you know, deeply fulfilling and engaging advocacy work with our own communities and get to learn, you know, what's going on in our communities, but we've had the chance to just make really great friendships and ties with people. And this has been one of the best experiences for me since I moved to Indiana, to just have this incredibly supportive community. And I would urge people not to be, who are interested in getting involved with various issues, whether it's with NAPOLF or other community issues, to not be intimidated. I think everything that you do matters a lot and builds up over time. And I think I used to think things like phone calls or emails didn't make a difference. And I've learned that it really does. And just, sending your voice out there, putting yourself out there and communicating with our leaders, being a part of our community in whatever ways works for you, I think is just so important. And there are so many different ways to contribute. And I think everybody can find the way that they are most comfortable with contributing to community efforts or, and it can be social, it can be political, it can be community advocacy. But I think, it's just, you get so many benefits. It's not only that you're helping people, but you also get to build a sense of community, feel like you're a part of something. And as I said, really make these deep connections and ties and know that you are doing something for everybody around you and for your whole community.
Yeah, and if I can plug one more thing about NAPOF Indiana, they're a really intergenerational group. I think that's one thing I want to really emphasize, is that it's a, really intergenerational. And I think that is like kind of like where our power comes from, is because we know that in APEC communities, we live multi-generationally, we live multilingually, and like that's kind of like where our power comes from, is like from doing multilingual, multi-generational organizing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much to Siri and to Shruti for joining us today. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. I hope that you learned from this conversation as much as I have, and I hope you feel empowered to, you know, go right after this episode to NAPOF's website and get involved and hopefully sign that petition. Hereabouts is produced by WFHB Community Radio and Indiana University's Asian Culture Center. We ask critical questions about identity, culture, community, and shared assumptions. We air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the evening. Please stay tuned for our future episodes. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode.